It's taken 20 years and thousands of deals for me to craft the best contracts for real estate wholesaling on the planet. Now, having super duper amazing contracts is one of the most important tools in your toolbox as a wholesaler. Now, even if you think you have good contracts, throw them away because mine are better. Last year alone, 40,972 people downloaded these contracts, and I've made some important updates recently. So on this video, not only am I going to walk you through when to use them and step-by-step how to fill them out, be sure to stay to the end of this video. I'm going to show you how to get them for free. But first, if you're new here, I'm Jerry Norton. I went from dead broke to making millions of dollars a year. And after doing thousands of deals, I created this channel to help you master the art of wholesaling and flipping real estate so you can live your dream life. So if you want to be a flipping genius like me, subscribe to my channel and watch my videos. Okay, here it comes. I am not a lawyer, nor am I giving legal advice. You are a big boy or a big girl, and you alone are responsible for your own actions. So always seek competent professional legal advice when transacting real estate. It's also important to understand that real estate is governed and regulated at the state level. That means specific contract law may vary from state to state. It's your responsibility to learn the nuances in your state, especially regarding regulation around wholesaling. Now, I cover this topic extensively here on my channel and have an entire playlist dedicated to understanding wholesale regulation. I'll put that playlist link in the description below for you. Now, as a result of this ongoing regulation, most of the new updates in my contract are about proper disclosure. In fact, as you'll see, disclosures are a big deal for me. Today, more than ever, you have to be crystal clear about your intentions. And as you may have gathered in wholesale real estate, everything hinges on the contract. Once it's in writing, the seller is committed and obligated to the terms of the contract, and as such, cannot sell the property to anyone else. Likewise, when you sell to a cash buyer, once in writing, you cannot sell the deal to anyone else, and the cash buyer is committed to buy the deal. Having really good contracts with proper disclosures sets clear expectations between the parties and ensures a smooth transaction. Executed contracts are also mandatory for title companies to open escrow and transact the closing. Until you have fully executed contracts, you don't actually have a deal. Bottom line, no contract, no deal. In wholesaling, there are two primary contracts you'll use. A contract between you and the seller, typically called a purchase and sale agreement, and then another contract between you and the cash buyer, which could be one of two different options depending on whether you double close or assign your deal to the cash buyer. Now, I'll explain both in detail, so keep watching. One thing to keep in mind when wholesaling on-market properties, which are listed for sale with real estate agents, is agents are required to use their state-approved contracts. However, it's still your responsibility to make sure that those contracts have everything in them so that you can successfully wholesale your deal. I did a video that breaks down 10 things you need the agent to include in their contract. I'll put the link to that video in the description below and you can watch it later. Now, one final thought on wholesaling on-market properties. The agent is only involved in the contract between you and the seller and is not involved in the contract between you and the cash buyer. That is your responsibility. Okay, so now let's talk about off-market properties where there are no agents. When you're working directly with the seller, it's up to you to procure the contract. And if you're like me, when I first got started, understanding how to fill out contracts can seem intimidating and overwhelming. But once you understand the mechanics and what's included in that contract, and after you go through the process of filling it out a few times, it's actually pretty easy. So what I want to do now is I want to pull up each of my contracts and go over them with you and show you exactly how to fill them out. There are actually three different contracts that I want to go over, but before we get started, there are two very important things you'll notice about my contracts. First, I do not use the word contract anywhere, even though that's what I've been calling them. Instead, I use the word agreement. And when I'm talking to sellers, I try not to use the word sign and instead use the word approve. So instead of saying to a seller, sign this contract, I'll say approve this agreement. The reason is because when people hear sign a contract, it triggers negative thoughts and emotions such as legally binding and lawyer. Whereas approve this agreement is much less intimidating and evokes a feeling of trust and unity. Okay, let's get started. Okay, so the first contract we're going to look at is the purchase and sale agreement. Now, again, this is often referred to from in the wholesaling community as the A-B contract, A seller, B wholesaler. Now, you'll see why that matters in a minute when we look at our other contracts. But for now, this is the most important one because it's the first contract between the seller and you. And if you take a look here at this contract, it says the purchase and sale agreement is entered into between a blank there for the buyer. That would be you. You're going to put your information in there, your name or your LLC with an address of, and then you put your business address or whatever address you use. And then you put the seller's name there with an address of and the seller's address. And then number one says the opening. The opening will occur upon the date of this agreement is mutually executed and acknowledged by the title, escrow, or closing attorney. So that depends on what state you're in, whether you use title, escrow, or a closing attorney. That's going to be called the escrow agent. That's the person at the title company or attorney that's going to close the transaction. Number two is the property. So the property, it says here that we're going to buy this as is. We're not going to ask the seller to do things like fix something. We're going to take the property as is and then described as, and then this is where you put the address of the property. Okay. And that's going to be referred to here on out as the property. Number three, purchase price. The purchase price to be paid at close of escrow, which is COE. So you'll see that close of escrow is simply the closing date of the transaction. And the price is going to be, and you handwrite out the dollar amount, and then you put the dollar in numbers next to that. The purchase price shall be paid to seller as follows. An earnest money deposit, EMD, of, and then you're going to put an earnest money dollar amount there. Now, a lot of wholesalers don't put earnest money. A lot of educators say don't put earnest money. I'm a big believer in paying earnest money, even if it's low, $100, something to show that you're putting a good faith deposit down with your contract. The reason why is because if your contract is ever challenged in court, a judge or a court is going to look at the legitimacy of your contract. And if you pay no earnest money, then that doesn't look good for you. Earnest money is what validates a contract. So make sure that you put something there. I try to do $500 or $1,000. Sometimes I'll use it as a selling feature to my offer and I'll put a high earnest money and I'll explain to the seller why that's a benefit. So the balance that's due at close of escrow would be the purchase price less the earnest money equals the balance. So for example, if the purchase price was $100,000 and you're putting $1,000 earnest money, the balance would be $99,000. And then number four says how the earnest money is going to be held. It's going to be held in an escrow account at the title company. And then it's very clear language in here that you get that back in the event that the property doesn't close for some reason. Okay, number five is financing. So financing here, we've got four different options. So you're going to checkbox the option that applies to you. Most offers are going to be cash. And this is very important. Most people misunderstand what cash means. Cash isn't cold, hard cash in a brown paper bag under your mattress. I mean, that could be cash. It's not even liquid funds in a checking account in the bank. That could be cash. But cash simply means that it's not traditional financing and your offer is not contingent upon getting that financing. So it says cash is defined as capital from the buyer's personal funds or the buyer's investors, partners, or any unconventional lending sources. This agreement is not contingent on the buyer securing funds to close. So it's simply stating here that cash means it's not a contingency. A financing contingency would be if I don't get the loan, then I can back out of the contract. We don't have that here. Okay. Or it could be subject to. So if you're doing creative financing, it could be subject to. You can put some terms in there, taking over the existing loan. It could be seller financing. You would put this price, this down, this interest rate, just some basic terms there. Or for some reason, you could be using traditional financing and make a contingency and then put the terms in there. Like contingent, I get a loan from the bank with 20% down and, you know, a 6% interest rate or whatever. So you check the one that applies to you. Number six, inspection period. This is very important when wholesaling. The inspection period is your due diligence. That's your time for due diligence. Now, I used to have in my older contracts where I would have all the way up until closing as a due diligence period, but that doesn't look good. Again, if I go before a judge, I want my contract to stand alone and not be too one-sided. If it's too one-sided, then the judge is going to favor in the other party, right? So a legit contract is going to have a reasonable inspection period. So I typically do 10 days max, could be 7 days, 5 days, 3 days, but you would put, you know, 10 calendar days from the date of this agreement, during which time buyer will have the absolute right to cancel this agreement for any reason whatsoever at buyer's sole and complete discretion. Upon such cancellation, buyer shall be entitled to a return of all earnest money held in escrow. So this is letting the seller know, letting everybody know that that inspection timeframe, you don't have to prove anything. It's just a window of time for you to do your own personal due diligence. And then you have the right to then exercise that and back out if you need to. Okay, so that's page one. Page two here is at the top, number seven, access to the property. Between the date of the opening of escrow, seller grants buyer the buyer's employees, inspectors, partners, investors, contractors, or agents access to the property. This is in case your cash buyer needs to get in there, or maybe you're going to flip it. You need contractors, your buyers need contractors, investors, partners, all the different people that might need to get in this property. This is a lot. The seller is agreeing to give us access. Now, there's a couple different things that could be happening here. It could be vacant, it could be occupied by the seller, or it could be occupied by a tenant. So I have three different options. If it's vacant, then the buyer reserves the right to install a lockbox on the property, which will contain a key to the property provided by the seller. Seller acknowledges and agrees that the lockbox will permit the buyer access to the property. Seller acknowledges and agrees that there is a risk to having the lockbox and that it's possible that an unauthorized person may go into the property and the buyer is not insuring against theft, loss, or vandalism. In other words, if somebody else gets in there, you're not held responsible for anything that might happen. Okay, if it's occupied, then we need to get the seller to, you know, we need to give the seller notice. So if the property is occupied by seller, tenant, or otherwise, as of this opening, seller shall permit buyer access with 24-hour notice. And again, we want this in writing so that the seller can agree to this. And if it's, so let's go to number eight. If it's tenant occupied, a couple things need to happen here. We need to be clear about what's happening with that tenant. So is the tenant staying? If the tenant, are they leaving? So the first one is vacate property on or before close of escrow. If the seller's agreeing that the tenant's going to be out, then now that has to happen to close the contract. It could be that the tenant stays. Maybe it's a good paying tenant and they're going to stay. Maybe their lease supersedes your contract. That's state specific. It says the seller shall deliver the following to the buyer within 5 days of opening, which would be 5 days from the contract. Current leases on the property, a certified rent roll, and that's going to be updated again 5 days before close of escrow, and evidence of a security deposit on hand, if any. So why do you need all that? Because your cash buyer is going to need that for them to decide if they want to buy the property and keep the tenant. Okay, number nine, the escrow agent. The escrow agent is the person at the title company or the attorney, depending on your state, that's going to close the contract, close the transaction. And this is where we want control over who the closing company is. So it says seller and buyer hereby employ, and then you'll put your wholesaler friendly title company. If you don't know who that is yet, don't worry about it. Just put to be determined, and then you can decide later. And they're going to act as the escrow agent for this transaction. So this constitutes the escrow instructions to the escrow agent, and you're going to follow the state laws and blah, blah, blah. Okay, this is important here. Let me read this. Number nine here, it says, hereby authorized and instructed to prepare and execute on behalf of the buyer and the seller an affidavit of property value using the purchase price for the established value of the property. What is an affidavit of property value? Okay, what that means is it means the seller is acknowledging that the price they're selling the property to is acknowledged as the value of the property. Now, why do I have this in here? Because you don't want the seller to come back later and say, hey, the real value of my property was $100,000 and I sold it to you for $30,000 and you scammed me and ripped me off. You don't want that claim being made. So this is establishing, everyone's agreeing that the value is equal to the price. Number 10, close of escrow. The closing date shall occur on or before the date. So 30 days out or whatever. Now, I don't put a date. I put 30 days, 21 days, 14 days, because then that date is contingent upon whatever day you actually sign. So if the contract goes back and forth, it's going off of the executed date. That's when the clock starts. Okay, it says the rest of this number 10 is talking about title. What we want here is we want a free and clear title. We want a warranty deed or equivalent. We want to make sure that we're getting a good marketable title. Your buyer is going to require that, and that's just really smart. So that's number 10. Number 11, closing fees. So every state is different, and the contract is going to dictate how the closing fees are determined. So first and foremost, closing fees due at close of escrow, with the exception of delinquent property taxes, mortgage liens, mechanics liens, IRS liens, judgments, or any liens, this is not including that. So the seller would pay all of those types of liens out of their proceeds, right? But what about all the other closing fees, like prorations or attorney fee, closing fee, transaction, a TC fee? What else could there be? Recording fees. All of those typical closing fees need to be decided who's paying those. So we have four options. The buyer and seller shall each pay their respective escrow and closing fees according to the usual and customary practice in the state of whatever state you're in. Some states handle that differently. Sometimes the seller pays the transfer tax. Sometimes the buyer pays it. So this is just saying we're going to follow the normal rules in our state. The second option is buyer and seller agree to split evenly. Maybe you agree to that with the seller. The third option is buyer pays all of the closing fees. That's typical in wholesaling where you say as the buyer will pay all the closing fees. You pass it on to your cash buyer. The fourth one could be the seller pays all closing fees. Now, why would the seller pay all the closing fees? Maybe you say to them, hey, I'll agree to your price, but you pay the closing fees. This is just where you're using closing fees to negotiate. Okay, so that's closing fees. Number 12, prorations. So prorations are just how are the property taxes handled, property turnover, you know, seller gives the buyer the keys. Number 14, debris, personal belongings. At close of escrow, seller shall deliver to the property or to the buyer. Now, this is important. This can haunt you. Are you buying the property with all of their crap in it, their personal belongings and all of that? Or are they giving you the property vacant? So first one says, with debris and or personal belongings that are currently present in the property, and the buyer is going to assume responsibility for the trash out, removal, and cleanup of said debris and belongings. This is a value add. You might say to the seller, hey, you know what? I'll take it. It's got all this stuff in there. The previous tenants trashed it or whatever. It's the basement's full to the ceiling. I'll handle all of that. And you're making that easy and convenient now for the seller. So maybe you agree to that. Or the second option is without debris and or personal belongings. All debris and personal belongings to be removed from the interior, exterior of the property. In the event the property is not left in a neat and clean condition, buyer will have cleanup completed at the seller's expense, which cost at buyer's option may be deducted from the purchase price. Seller's obligation to pay buyer shall survive the cancellation of this agreement or close of escrow. Any items remaining in the property at close of escrow shall be considered trash and removed by the buyer. So again, it's just getting clear on how debris and belongings are going to be handled. Number 15, appliances. Now, appliances are not fixed to a property. So those can be removed or they can stay. So this is clarifying that. All working appliances, are they going to stay? Or the first option is not included. So the seller is going to take those, or they are included with the exception of maybe the seller wants to keep the barbecue or something. So, or whatever. So you'll put that in there. If there is anything else that you want, number 16, you would write that out. So like, I bought a property that had a motorcycle one time, a car one time. So if there's anything on the premise that you want, you would specify it in writing on number 16. Okay, now I've got some disclosures that are really important here I want to talk about. Number 17, marketing. This is something new in our contract. If permissible and in accordance to real estate governance in the state of Michigan or whatever state you're in, seller authorizes and permits buyer to advertise the property for rent or sale and or advertise this agreement for sale. That's wholesaling, right? You're selling the agreement, the contract, not the property, as a principal to this agreement. Now, this is very important because it's allowing the seller's giving you permission to do marketing. So they can't get mad later if, you know, this is on a Facebook page or there's a for sale sign somewhere or online somewhere. You know, or the MLS or whatever, the seller's giving you the right to market either the property or the contract, depending on your exit strategy. Okay, number 18, seller's deliveries. Let's see. Okay, so if there's any kind of, the seller needs to provide a five-year insurance claims history. So that way you know where their claims, what happened. Again, this is something that you'll pass on to your buyer. It's just good to have any kind of insurance claims that might have happened. Number 19, 20, 21, and 22 are all new disclosures recently that I've added to my contract. These all are centered around either issues I've had directly or regarding some of the regulation that's being passed and some of the concerns in the consumer protection world. And most of this is all centered around disclosure. So let's go through these. It's very important that these are in here now and that you understand them and that you go over them with your sellers. Number 19 is an equity release. Seller acknowledges that the purchase price may be less than market value and voluntarily agreed to sell the property to the buyer for convenience, to save money or time, lack of funds to renovate, and or any other personal reasons, and herein releases and waives any and all claims against existing or future exit equity arising from the property. So they can't come back and say there was equity and you owe me that equity and I didn't know there was equity. They're acknowledging and releasing any equity that might either be there or come in the future. Buyer has not made seller any representations or promises as to the value of the property in its as-is current condition. Okay, number 20, a profit disclosure. Super important here. Seller acknowledges that buyer is an investor and is purchasing the property with the intent to make a profit by either renting, fixing and flipping, reselling, and or assigning this agreement. So the seller can't come back and say, well, I didn't know you were buying it to flip it and make a bunch of money. I didn't know you were going to sign it for 20 grand. And now I'm upset. Now I'm making a claim that I didn't know your intent and you tricked me or any of that. It's a profit disclosure. Super important. 21, an assignment disclosure. Seller acknowledges that buyer may assign his or her interest in the purchase of the property to a third party and buyer who shall be any party selected at any time of the buyer prior to close of escrow and affirmed with a separate written assignment of agreement executed by buyer and end buyer. In the event of an assignment of agreement, seller acknowledges that buyer will collect a fee from the end buyer that is separate from the purchase price in this agreement. What are you doing? You're basically disclosing that you may wholesale the property and that you have the right to do that and that you're going to make money doing that and that the seller is okay with you doing that. Okay, 22, the last main disclosure here, agency disclosure. Seller acknowledges that the buyer does not hold an active real estate license with the state of whatever state you're doing the deal in. Or checkbox, seller does hold an active real estate license with the state of whatever state you're in. Now, this is important. Your seller acknowledges that the seller does not, or the seller has not been represented by the buyer or any representative of the buyer with respect to the purchase and sale of the property. Seller agrees and understands that the buyer's representatives are not acting as the seller's broker or an agent in the transaction and have been acting solely for the buyer's own benefit as a principal to this agreement. Seller agrees to hold buyer free of any and all liability regarding the property and transaction arising from any claim on agency. And claim on agency would be maybe the seller had a listing agreement with another agent and that agent now is entitled to a commission. Maybe if you're licensed, maybe they're saying, well, I thought you were acting as my agent. It eliminates any issues with being licensed or not licensed. And you're making that clear. Hey, I'm not licensed. I'm representing myself, or I am licensed and I'm representing myself. Okay. Super important that you do this. This is one of the biggest things around regulation from the real estate commissions is around holding a real estate license. Okay. Some of these here, I'm not going to go over all the way. Remedies. If the seller fails to comply, then here's how we're going to handle this. Lead-based paint. Those are required by law. 25, representation by seller. Seller's giving you full representation. They're telling you everything they know. They're not hiding anything. they don't have another contract with somebody else, all of that kind of stuff. I'm not going to go through all of these. You can read through these if you want. There's no other agreements in place. Number 26, indemnity and release of claims. No one's holding you accountable for any claims on the property. Miscellaneous, time is of the essence. So that talks about the urgency. Hey, we really want to get this executed and done quickly. Any kind of notices that are going on here, how those are going to be handled. That's B. Let's see, 28C, documents, the entire agreement, IRS and reporting, construing the agreement, partial and validity, counterpart, survival. This is going to survive past a death. Any kind of waivers, attorney fees. So some of this is just typical contract stuff, protecting you, protecting the seller. Cooperation, binding effect, right to counsel. The seller has a right to get representation. You're going to follow all the governing laws in your state. So number O, you want to make sure that you're following, you know, all of the real estate law in the state. And then acceptance, P, they need to accept. You want to give them a window of time, typically 24 or 48 hours to accept the agreement. 29 would be any other things that you don't have in here that you might want to add in here. And then seller signs, buyer signs, initials, and that's it. Okay. Again, super duper amazing. Best wholesaler contract you'll ever find. There it is. Updated disclosures. And stick around. I'm going to show you how to get that for free in a second. But let me go through our next contract here. This is also a purchase and sale agreement. This one's only 3 pages. And this is our BC contract. B being wholesaler, C being cash buyer. Now, you already have one purchase and sale agreement between AB, seller, and wholesaler. Why would we have a BC between wholesaler and cash buyer? This would be in the event that you double close. Double close would be you have one transaction where you close as the buyer with the seller, then you turn around 5 minutes later, or, you know, same day, next day, you turn around and resell to your cash buyer. Why would you do that? Well, maybe you don't want to disclose your wholesale fee. Maybe there's a no assignment clause in the contract. No, like they didn't agree to that for some reason. So you have to then double close. So if you do, then when you find your cash buyer, you are going to use a BC contract. And this looks much different. It gives you, now you're the seller. So now you want some protections as the seller. So let's go through this. This is between buyer, you fill out your address, the seller and their information, which would be you, property address. Number two, purchase price. This would be the price that you're selling it to the cash buyer. Earnest money. Earnest money is very important. This is one of the most important things with a cash buyer, is getting a substantial earnest money. Mine are minimum $2,500. I like to get $5,000, $10,000 earnest money. And look at this language here, number three. EMD is non-refundable. That means if they don't close, they lose their earnest money. It's to be held in an insured escrow account held by the escrow agent of the seller's choice. Remember, you're the seller now, so you want the control. This is the BC contract. So B is wholesaler as the seller. C is buyer as the cash buyer. So seller's choice, and if escrow closes, the EMD shall be credited against the purchase price. So if they move forward and close, it's a credit. If this agreement is canceled by the buyer for any reason and the buyer does not close and fund close of escrow pursuant to the terms of this agreement is automatically terminated and the agreement serves as notice to the escrow agent to release the seller the earnest money deposit. So you don't need to go get permission. It just means if they default and don't close, you get their earnest money, and this is serving as instruction to escrow to give you that earnest money. Okay, so how do you prevent that from happening? Obviously, get a big earnest money. Number four, funding. There's no financing contingency. Funds to purchase the property shall be cash. Cash is defined as funds from the buyer's personal funds or the buyer's investors, partners, or unconventional lending sources such as hard money. Proof of funds. Buyer to provide hard proof of funds in the form of a bank statement and or approval letter from a hard money lender. No soft proof of funds here. Number six, escrow agent, seller and buyer hereby employ, and that's going to be the same escrow and title, however you closed it, whatever you put in the AB contract, you're going to put here as well. You want the same closing agent doing both, right? The whole thing. Number seven, close of escrow, the closing date shall occur on, and then that's going to be the same date as your AB contract, right? They need to mirror each other. This is important here. It says time is of the essence with respect to all dates specified in the agreement. Any addendums, all deadlines are intended to be strict and absolute. If the closing does not occur by close of escrow, this agreement is automatically terminated and the seller shall return any earnest money deposits as liquidated damages. Okay. Extension of close of escrow. You got to get that in writing. There could be a penalty for that if they push past that. Escrow fees. Again, who's paying the escrow fees? You're going to mirror what your original contract has. That way it's super clear to your cash buyer. Same with prorations, delivery, marketing. One thing that's important here is number 10. Buyer cannot advertise or promote the property for sale prior to close. Seller reserves the right to continue to offer property for sale until this offer has been formally accepted in writing and all contingencies removed in writing. So you want to make sure that the buyer doesn't go out and daisy chain, that we call that daisy chain, where they try to resell your contract to another buyer, right? They have to get your permission to do that. And that's where number 12 is important. Buyer cannot assign this agreement without the express written consent of seller. You're the seller. They need your permission if they want to try to reassign the contract. Maybe you'll let them. Like sometimes I let them. I don't care as long as I'm getting my assignment fee. I just want to know what's going on. Okay, a hold harmless. That's normal. Any other agreements? No other agreements need to be in place. Binding. Okay, that's it. So pretty simple, pretty clean, making sure that you, the seller, have the protections since you're now in control. Okay, and the third contract that we're going to talk about now is the assignment of purchase and sale agreement. And look at this, one page. Isn't that beautiful? And this is really simple. Basically, this is saying that this contract you created for, let's say, $100,000, the AB contract between seller and wholesaler, this now says that the cash buyer gets to take this and purchase it and now step in and take on the role as the buyer of this contract that you created. So the assignment made, it's going to have that. It's going to have the assignee. Now, the assignee would be the cash buyer. The assignor would be you, the wholesaler. You're assigning your contract. You're the assignor. So you'd put the cash buyer's info, your info, the date, the property address, a legal description. And then here's the total of, and then you would put that total dollar amount that you're assigning your contract for, and which is to include the assigner's assignment fee, close of escrow, on or before, and that's going to be the same close of escrow in your original contract. Further, assignee agrees to pay a non-refundable deposit within 24 hours of this execution of this agreement in the amount of, to be held by the escrow agent, which is refundable only if title is not clear and conveyable if escrow closes and shall be a credit towards the fee. So the only way that the cash buyer could get back that fee, this is in the BC as well. The only way they could get that back is if for some reason they can't get free and clear title. Otherwise, if that buyer backs out, just like our BC contract, you get to keep their earnest money. Now, this is something new that we've added. This is one of the updates in my assignment. Assignee agrees to pay a transaction coordinator fee, a TC fee of whatever, $500, payable to your TC and due at time of escrow. Now, I use this all the time on my creative wholesale deals because I always use a transaction coordinator to close my creative deals. But we're also using transaction coordinators on just my normal assignments with a lot of my partners and a lot of my markets that I wholesale in. So this is great because this is now basically creating a fee that the cash buyer agrees to pay for. It would go on as a fee in the closing statement on the day of closing and paid for by the cash buyer. How cool is that? Cash buyer pays your fee for your transaction coordinator. So keeping on here, it says if assignee does not close by the close of escrow, assignee forfeits their deposit, and the escrow agent is hereby instructed to release the deposit to the assignor. So again, this is just saying that you're going to get their earnest money if they don't close. And then the assignee acknowledges and agrees to all of the terms of the original agreement, and they're liable for taking on all of the terms of the original agreement. And that's basically it. Super cut and dry. Once you get that executed, you now would have two things. You'd have the AB contract that goes to title, they open escrow. Then when you get your assignment contract, you give that to the same closing agent and they close the deal. You walk out of there with your fee. Or if you're doing a double closing, you would have the same one, your original AB contract with the seller and the wholesaler, your BC contract with wholesaler and cash buyer. Both these go to the escrow agent and they do two closings back to back and you walk out of there with the net proceeds between the two. And that's how we do it. Now, prior to the release of this video, I used to give away a free download link to my old purchase and sale agreement. But as of this recording, I've updated the link. So now it will give you this new and improved, super duper amazing and awesome updated version. All you have to do is go to wholesalercontracts.com to get the free download. All I ask in return is you leave a comment and say, Jerry, thank you for giving me the best wholesaler contracts in the world for free. You are a flipping genius. And by the way, I'm in the process of updating Flipster with this new agreement as well. That will be coming out shortly. Now, if you've never heard of Flipster, it's the nation's number one wholesaling and house flipping deal management system to help you organize, streamline, and automate all of the steps to wholesaling and flipping houses, including digital contracts that you can email directly to sellers or cash buyers for electronic signature right on their smartphone or computer. And digital contracts are just one of dozens of tools included with Flipster to see it in action and test drive it for free. Just go to joinflipster.com. Finally, having the best wholesaler contracts in the world means nothing if you don't have any deals. So next, I want you to watch a video where I break down a 30-day action plan to get your first deal. Watch that now. And remember, it's not about the money. It's about having the time and freedom to have, be, do, and give everything you want in life. That's what it's all about. And I'll see you on the next video.